politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, Bo?
Yeah?
I'm moving.
You?
Moving.
Yes, no, you move me greatly. I find you to be an emotionally satisfying person.
I totally realize that I'm a moving personality and all that, but I'm actually physically moving.
I bet in this move, you're probably looking for scorpions everywhere.
I kind of think they already found me, which is disturbing. Because the place I had been living in, I'd only seen one scorpion with you.
I know. But I just am kidding with you. What's going on with your move? How's it going?
It's emotional, only in the fact that going to a new place, having to take everything and schlep it from one place to another, convincing the U.S. Postal Service that it's really me making a change of address, it's a process.
So it's a great time for other people to convince them that they're you as well. And that's always the issue with moving. You know, you're open to all stripe of real estate scam and real estate related scam and moving scams, and all your stuff is in boxes and someone could just rifle through those boxes. It's a fun time. You must be really excited.
And your mail is in the process of trying to figure out where it's going.
Yeah.
And people can intercept it. Your email, you're trying to change information, and sometimes people have the old information versus the new information versus information that has absolutely nothing at all to do with you.
Well, one of the great things now that the U.S. Postal Service has come up with is a paid service called Informed Delivery. And so now when you're moving, you can sign up for it before you move, and they will actually take a picture of every piece of mail that's wending its way to you, so you know before it happens, for a year, and it's $30. So it's one way that you can protect yourself in going forward in this, you know, unsettled state where, you know, you're moving, there's nothing but moving parts, and you're distracted. Not only are you distracted, but you don't have a familiar pattern of in a way of doing things yet. And that leaves you wide open to getting attacked.
Well, except to be the contrarian in this conversation, because I am contrary from time to time. Mm-hmm. If someone were to break into my email and mm-hmm. saw the pictures of the email coming to me from other people, they might be able to also create things that look like they're coming from other people.
You're the most annoying person on earth.
I do try to be annoying. Travis, what do you think about that?
I'd call it a close tie.
No, not about whether I'm annoying or not, but how do you feel about the concept that someone could, well, bring themselves into your mail world and find out who's mailing you things and then simply replicate what they're mailing, except with far different information?
Well, I'd say with email, that's always going to be the Achilles heel for anyone. If they're an organization, person, individual, what have you, it's easily still the favorite vector for attackers and hackers of all stripes. So,
but we did see a scam about a year or two ago where people actually created snail mail versions of Internal Revenue Service communications, except they changed the address where people were supposed to send their checks.
Now, that is kind of sneakily brilliant. I think the one thing about it, though, is if you're sending something through snail mail, you require money to be able to pay for postage. Whereas one of the things that can make email so effective is you can just send millions of emails out, oftentimes by compromising another email server. And that doesn't cost you really anything.
Which brings us to our story today, in a kind of crazy way. Hi there, I'm Adam Levin, former director of the New Jersey Division of Consumer Affairs, founder of CyberScout, author of the book Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves.
And I'm Bo Friedlander, cybermensch, writer, and all-around curious person who tries to hack hackers.
And I'm Travis Taylor, resident tech guy.
So Josh, our next guest, is a partner at a major real estate company in California.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, Josh, it's Adam Levin. I'm here with Bo Friedlander and Travis Taylor, the dynamic cybersecurity trio. And we really appreciate you coming on the show today. You have a very interesting story. But before we start, where are you talking to us from now?
We're from sunny Southern California. We're in West Los Angeles, headquartered at Beverly Hills. I'm a partner at a commercial real estate outfit down here. And you know, we love California. And how about you guys? Where are you guys based out of?
I'm in Arizona.
Okay.
Bo is dodging bears in Connecticut.
Good for him.
And Travis is living the good spiritual life up in Oregon.
A lot rainier and cloudier. Yep.
Yeah, I bet. We do business up in Washington State, so we're up there often in the Puget Sound area. And we're lucky enough to get up there in the summertime or spring, late spring. It's really great. But the other time it's a little drizzly. So we're not used to it down here where we get the sunshine.
Yes, I know. In places like Washington and Oregon, people go outside and say, there's a strange fireball in the sky. I have no idea what it is, but
that's just 8 months out of the year. The other 4 months are really quite pleasant.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But anyway, so tell us what brings you on our No Shame Zone haven for all those who have somehow experienced an unpleasant experience online.
Yeah, you know, we've experienced some of that unpleasantness in the past. Nothing that was as serious as what we dealt with a few weeks ago. As you guys are well aware, it's, for groups like us who have sensitive information being traded back and forth on a regular basis and money flowing in and out as our operations require. We had a third party and still do have a third party group that protects us and is part of our cybersecurity, but I guess no plan is foolproof. And, a few weeks ago, one of my associates, kind of complained that some of her emails were missing and her outbox was acting funny. And, you know, so naturally we told her to just investigate and see what was happening. And so she spent the night doing that. And I think, everyone's busy with their core work. You know, you feel like if something's acting strange on your outbox and Outlook, it's not exactly priority number one. Maybe it should have been, but, That issue kind of lingered for a day or two, and then I guess she did a little bit of digging deeper, and she saw that there was all these emails in her outbox that she didn't send. She's like, well, okay, this is strange. And so, she elevated that at that point up to our third party group, and it turned out over the course of 48 or 72 hours, someone had infiltrated our Outlook and our Microsoft Exchange, I guess. And was actually had broken in or hacked in and was sending emails from not only her email with her email signature. So these were from the recipient's perspective, completely authorized, real emails that folks were getting. And turned out that it wasn't just her. It was someone in our controllers department, one of our accounting department folks. And what this group did was they somehow infiltrated. They sent emails or they searched, keywords like, wire owed or wire outbound, wire inbound, invoice unpaid. And for a group like us working in commercial real estate, of course, that's a natural part of our day-to-day operations. We're sending wires in and out, not daily, but certainly weekly. And we have tenants that give us money and send us checks, send us wires. And so, we're an easy target for a group like that. And so they got a hold of someone that actually owed us six figures, and we were expecting a wire that week.
Well, that's one of the hallmarks of what they do is they crawl into your system. How they get in could be somebody's information was stolen in a breach elsewhere, and the same user ID and login is being used in the company that people use in another life, or a third-party vendor may have been breached, and as a result, that kind of credential situation is used, exploited. This is certainly not a situation where someone, like in my world, goes, well, I took Ambien last night and suddenly realized I sent a whole lot of emails that I didn't realize I sent, or I have no idea this got there. But listen, it's very disturbing. It's very scary.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely scary. And so, you know, the scary part is that once that person or group or what have you is in your system and able to send emails from your outbox, basically, they can represent themselves as a person in your business. And we do, at least in our business, 90% of our communication with folks is through email. And I'm sure that's probably goes for other businesses as well. And so once you have that in hand, your power is limitless for that limited amount of time until the breach is actually recognized. And so this person, through an associate and through someone in our accounting department, was having conversations with folks back and forth multiple rounds. It wasn't one email.
This person being the person who hacked into the email, Josh?
Correct. The group, the person, the hacker. Right.
Well, exactly. I have a question for you now.
Sure.
I want to back up a little bit.
Okay.
The hacker went through emails until they were able to find a really good target. And that was somebody who owed six figures. Is that right?
Correct.
And now, how did they reach out? How did they reach out to that person? Tell us about that part of the communication.
They actually emailed the person that was our contact at this group. It was another real estate company that owed us some money for a transaction we helped them do. And they said, hey, we're having issues with our banking. There's a 3-month delay on something or other, incoming wires or to fix the problem. It's going to take weeks or months. And
now, is that typical? Is that a real thing? Does that happen?
No, not at all.
Okay. Right?
But they formulated it in a way that could potentially be plausible if someone isn't paying attention, right? So it's right on the frontier of plausibility, right? I mean, and so this person kept saying, okay, well, what are the new instructions? And sure, people change wire instructions from time to time. It's not unheard of for someone to say, well, send it to this bank. You know, it's going to be easier for us or what have you. And so they set up this narrative that, hey, this is not where we want it sent. We want it sent somewhere else. And, you know, the wire instructions were accepted and were being processed, actually. Hmm. And it takes a little bit of sloppiness from both parties, right? So certainly from our perspective, we were a little sloppy with our cybersecurity, or the way we deal with wires could have been improved.
Your perception of the situation on your side of the street was that your company had could have done better on the cybersecurity front.
Well, it could have done better on two fronts. I'm not privy or knowledgeable enough to say that our group that is protecting us from a cybersecurity perspective dropped the ball or not. I'm certainly not. All I can say is that we did implement better security measures after, which with the question was asked, why didn't we have that in place already?
No, hindsight's 20/20, but cybersecurity practice, you know, a strong cybersecurity practice can be as simple as making sure everybody in your organization is hyper paranoid. It can be that simple. And so it's not just that you have the killer app that's there to, like, a bug zapper in the yard killing everybody that comes anywhere near you. It's really more that everyone in your organization understands what the threat is, the way it presents itself, and what to look out for. So it sounds like there was a lapse somewhere in that front.
Correct. So that's what I meant by we were sloppy, right? I mean, if you're sending wire instructions in the first place, we should have verbally confirm those on the phone with someone at that firm, right?
Oh, they didn't.
Well, they didn't, and we didn't. So we just sent our wire instructions as a PDF, which was common practice, which isn't anymore. Because we're doing so many of these transactions, sometimes you get a little sloppy. I mean, it's human nature. I mean, this is like for the million or $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, $10 million wires. Certainly, we're more careful, and we get people on the phone. But and six figures in our neck of the woods is not small money, but it's not something that people are focused on so much, which is where these hackers kind of prey on, right?
Well, Josh, that, you know, that's why an awful lot of, you know, real estate organizations now in particular always have a warning saying these are the wiring instructions, but before you wire, please call us to confirm.
Correct. And that's one of the things we're implementing.
I just got back from France and there was a lot of stuff I couldn't stream because I was in the wrong region. But using NordVPN, I was able to stream everything.
I use NordVPN too, but it's more to protect my private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. There are a million trackers online that are just sort of watching you. And NordVPN is a great way to get around those.
NordVPN can switch your virtual location, allowing you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price.
If you're traveling and you're using public Wi-Fi, NordVPN can protect you wherever you are.
It's not just that. NordVPN also comes with threat protection, which helps protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites.
NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, and it'll only set you back the price of a cup of coffee a month.
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTHack.
And hey, there's no risk. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Check the link in the podcast description.
So here's the deal. I use Yahoo Finance. I use it to make money because it works, not just because they're a sponsor of the show. Heck, I've been using them for years before they ever called to become a sponsor. I do a lot of investing, and I need to make split-second financial decisions, and that's where Yahoo Finance comes in. I trade stocks and I trade options, and you can't trade them in a vacuum. You gotta know what's going on. Yahoo Finance gives you the opportunity to look at the whole picture. I mean, breaking news, editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts. I love the customizable charts. They have it all. At Yahoo Finance, I'm part of a community of over 90 million users. You heard me. 90 million folks use Yahoo Finance because they're helping you on your way to financial success. Visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com, yahoofinance.com.
But it's not that common, Adam. I had, you know, I the last time I was recently working with people in your biz, Josh, and it was my lawyer who actually said, call.
But this should become a practice, though, in the real estate business.
Sure, sure, it should. Mm-hmm. But it's not ubiquitous.
And Josh, you guys can kind of spearhead this movement. Nice publicity for you guys as well, is to say at, because obviously you're part of an association when you get together. One of the things that you could be pushing is the fact that never, ever, ever send wiring instructions to anyone without a bold warning that you really need to call us to confirm, because unfortunately, wire transfer fraud is becoming more and more of a reality in our world.
Yeah, certainly. I couldn't agree more. And frankly, that should have been part of the policies, procedures of the group that we were working with as well. So it was a failure on several fronts. And, you know, we're all adapting to the new ways you have to protect yourself. And we have made those changes. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we've enabled two-factor authentication. I don't know if I can never say that word correctly. Yeah. So we've enabled, that's one of the things that I thought we should have had before, but it's, to your point, you know, hindsight is 2020. So we have that now.
It's so hard to have every piece in place and then to have like human beings, actual people doing something like two-factor authentication when they're like, I just want to go home. And you're like, yeah, okay, but you need to log in again and do this thing. So I have a question for you though, Josh. So
sure.
Did the money get taken? Did it?
No, it didn't. And so fortunately, I was called by my partner the morning of the third day, if you will. And he said, well, did you ask so-and-so to send an email to change our wiring instructions? And I said, absolutely not. And that doesn't sound like, no. And then he didn't even say bye. He just hung up the phone, right? Because he was on to what was happening. And so fortunately, he was able to intercept it. And then that's when everything, you know, came to light. Like, oh, my God, this is frightening. You know, someone. And then we went through all the emails and then we got our third party security firm involved. And we kind of started putting things together that this group or this hacker or hackers really had control over not only one of our lead accounting folks' emails, but also an associate. And what's interesting and smart on their part, if that's the right word, on the hacker's part, is that they didn't involve any of the execs like myself or my partners in this scheme.
It was the mid-level. There was nobody in the C-suite. It was all people in like management.
Right. And so that's what gives me the perception, at least, that this was an intelligent, complex, fraudulent group, right? I mean, it was clever, very. That's a good word to use. So, you know, none of us were included, because if I were to send wiring instructions, which is not typical, you know, that would have raised red flags from the group that they were asking to change the instructions from. So they may have looked through the history to see who is typically doing this kind of stuff. I mean, it's scary because it's a complex scheme. It wasn't a one-off person who was, at least from my, you know, from my point of view, that went in just to try to scam us out of a few bucks. This was a complex criminal outfit.
Well, it sounds like they picked their targets very well. That, as you said, it wasn't the $1 million wire transfer. It was the six figures. It wasn't the people at the very, very top that would have probably jumped or noticed something was wrong immediately. They went after the more mid-level management, who are probably receiving a ton of emails and filtering that out so that just to see what they can actually respond to, but also that are probably getting a lot of attachments, especially PDFs. And those PDF attachments very often will have something like malware attached to them.
I will add that they didn't just go after that one wire, right? They sent a few of our tenants emails saying, you owe us back rent, send 10 grand here, 20 grand there. So they just got further along on that wire. That was the furthest along. They actually sent out more than a dozen or more other emails to other tenants. And fortunately, those tenants just didn't get around to it, or they didn't really get any traction with those. But it wasn't a one thing that they were after.
The hackers in this area, many of them are really, really good. And they do an enormous amount of research because they realize there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for them. So they do that. But to show you how really sophisticated this could be, Travis, do you remember the case? It was maybe a year ago with a fellow that was in Africa. He was very highly respected in his community. He was an elder in the church. And they found out that he was running this multi-million dollar scam where they were so technologically advanced, they could get into your email, and as you sent out the wire transfer request, they actually changed the wiring instructions in transit. Wow. It wasn't even that they got it, but that they were sitting in the email and before you sent something, they did. It was as you sent something, they made the change.
Wow. I remember hearing something about that. And a simple fact of the matter, too, is that if you have something that relatively minor, it's not minor in terms of the damage it can do, but it's minor in terms of the fact that it's just looking for a specific couple of lines of text in an outgoing email. That's actually relatively simple to have a little script or just a minor piece of malware of some sort flying under the radar and making that one adjustment. It's not the sort of thing like ransomware where, the entire network gets shut down. It's just a little tiny edit that's going out, which is a lot harder to spot ultimately.
Yeah, scary stuff. Yeah, scary stuff.
You described a man in the middle attack, Adam, just now, this thing that was taking place with the changing of wire instructions in mid-flight. I've never heard of that. Travis, is that a very common thing?
Man in the middle attacks? Absolutely.
No, not a man in the middle attack. Go ahead. Explain what a man in the middle attack is first.
I mean, a man in the middle attack is more or less what it sounds like. It's something where when you have a communication between two parties, for instance, someone is able to intercept that and make an adjustment or just simply intercept the data for their own personal gain.
And the ability to change wiring instructions mid-transmission?
That's not necessarily common, but at the same time, you can through, say, Microsoft Office, there's such a thing as macros that can do the equivalent of an autocorrect. A pretty basic example is I was on the same mobile account with my wife, and every time I typed in the word miss, it would autocorrect to miss and love you, which for anyone who knows me well knows that is nothing I'm going to send anyone in a text. So, but so at the same time, if you were to take any kind of, say, Office productivity app, for instance, you could just say, this is a typo, correct this. And so if you're using boilerplate, especially instructions for wiring, it would be possible to use something to just put in a relatively low profile bit of code there just to say, and switch this out. Wow. In the same way that you could also change your outgoing email thing that if I were to, you know, start to type in Bo for Bo, you know, like what your email address is, yeah. if someone wanted to change that just to a different email address, I would very likely just start typing in Bo and then hit send to whatever email address pops up.
Right.
It's these little tiny hacks that are really easy to fly under the radar, because it's not anything that, you know, you don't have the stereotypical hacker story of the, you know, flaming skulls or evil clown telling you you've been hacked. It's just
all
a
your
little tiny
belong
tweak.
To us.
Yeah, exactly.
But Travis, I'm even more disturbed about the fact that you weren't sending me notes going, I love you. I'm sad.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every Electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the Electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance Electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's LECTRIC ebikes.com. But Josh, it sounds like you got off. I mean, it could have been worse. Could have been a lot worse.
No doubt. It could have been a lot worse. We caught it, you know, right at the end there where it could. And you know what's scary is there's no recovery. You know, once that wire is out, it's mm-hmm. gone. And then the finger pointing starts. Was like, oh well, you should have done this. It's just bad. It's bad for business. You lose the money. It reflects poorly on your own policies and procedures. It could have been awful, but we're using it as a learning experience and growing from it.
It could have been awful, and at the same time, it's something where when you talk about the finger pointing, one of the reasons we talk about this as being the no shame zone is because it happens so far across the board with companies or even federal agencies and the like. Everyone makes mistakes. It's something where there's you know, legions of hackers and scammers out there kind of waiting just for that one little slip up. And it only takes one misclick on an email attachment or one little tiny oversight there for them to pounce.
Now, and one thing is, you know, to go back to the question of cybersecurity, and I think there should be no finger pointing whatsoever, because cybersecurity is a very dynamic thing. And it is often catch as catch can. The idea, though, that you know, they were able to find, not the idea, but the reality that they were able to find good targets in just by rifling through email would suggest that maybe they were good and knew what they were looking for, but it also suggests that they might have been in there a while. And that's where cybersecurity systems and having a security person in charge of, you know, simply looking for trouble does matter, because do you have any idea how long they were in there?
You see, that's a good point. We thought of that, like, well, gosh, how long did we have someone snooping around? Maybe they waited 3 weeks, educated themselves on certain deals and processes that were up to, and then struck when they thought was the right time. Yeah. One of the frustrating things is we don't know that. We don't know how long they were in there. We don't know how, they got in there. Again, I don't know if that's a deficiency of the group that represents us from that perspective. I'm not
hard
an
to
expert
say.
On,
and not
on,
worth, right? Not worth saying really.
No. Yeah. And it really isn't. And for all I know, they did their job and as best as they could. So I'm not here to point fingers, to your point. When I said that there would be finger pointing, not necessarily internally here in our group, but you know, mm-hmm. you know, you'd say, well, why didn't you guys, you know, from the folks that sent the money, right? You say, well, why didn't you guys? I mean, this is, you know, why would you send it to a wire that?
That's them calling you right now.
Exactly. You know, why didn't you confirm it with us? Like, what the heck, guys? What the heck, guys? You know, no
there
pun intended.
You go.
So you know, and that's bad for business. And
yeah.
And it's glad we avoided that because it wouldn't have been good.
But Josh, you know, as another example, people go, well, how do they know who does what in our company? All you need to do is go to LinkedIn, right, and you'd be surprised, right, how much information they would get, yeah, as to who's, yeah, in your company and what they do.
We got to get into some helpful tips here. I mean, if I were thinking about going to work tomorrow and I worked in Josh's business, I'd be like, I just don't want to go. What are some tips? What are some things that any company, small, medium, large, can do to make themselves, now obviously it's impossible to ward off all attacks, but make themselves harder to hit, Adam?
Well, there are a few things. We go back to our three M's. The first M, the big M really, is how do you minimize your risk of exposure, reduce your attackable surface? And it's everything from long and strong passwords or using password management systems. It's about multi-factor authentication so that there's always a check as to who's getting into the system. It's sending a message to everybody that works in the company that the one thing you should not be doing is ever using a password or user ID that you use anyplace else. Because if wherever you're using it gets compromised, then they use that to leapfrog into the rest of your world. So you should definitely be doing that. People should be really careful in terms of the attachments they open, in terms of people that they communicate with. And whenever they see something that just seems a little off, don't think, oh, it's a mistake. It really could be an indication of a bigger problem. So that's why when your colleague noticed, first of all, that her email was missing and that suddenly there was a lot of other email that she had no idea should be there, was there, you know, it's very good that she notified somebody immediately and said, you know, Houston, we have a problem.
One thing that can be a little bit of a hassle for a lot of organizations, but can end up preventing a pretty nasty hack sometimes, is just to make sure, and there's a bit of controversy around this, but that you are assigning people passwords, that they don't get to pick their own. You can get a bit of grief from that. And yeah, that's something I'm sure anyone working in IT would absolutely dread because people argue with that so much. That being the case, if you have someone who is reusing their password and they're in a position in your company to even just be able to check an email that they have and download an attachment, that is a huge, huge area for entry there.
Oh, and another quick question too is that when people connect remotely into your systems, which I assume many people would, especially in the environment that we've all just lived through, are they working with work-only devices or are they allowed to use personal devices in order to connect into your network?
So we do allow remote connecting from personal devices. So you have your Outlook on your iPhone, which is technically a non-work device, and laptops are allowed. So yeah, I think Bo brings up a good point. I mean, there's multiple entry points in which you have weaknesses. And so you have to be vigilant. We did a good job of educating our employees and associates on if they do see something funny or if they don't feel right about something from a cybersecurity perspective to call the group that we've hired. That's why they're there. And that probably saved the day, actually, even though we should have had better policies and procedures on wire confirmations and what have you. That did save the day. And so we did do some things right.
You had Josh. You had a huge win when that employee called and said, I got a problem. There was a huge win. Huge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Confetti should be falling from the ceiling.
That's the ultimate no shame zone, is that you should encourage every single employee, if they have a problem, if they think they might have clicked on the wrong link, anything, that feel free to, tell us. We're here. We're part of this is a community. We're here to protect the community. And another thing that many companies do is they actually supply the device to their employees. And when they supply that device, they make sure that all the security protocols that they feel comfortable, that they want to see, are on that device. So it's part of training and supplying device with the kind of security that's really being overseen by the people that you trust to protect you on all the devices used by your employees who are communicating with the company.
All right, Adam, what if the company is small and they can't buy devices for everybody? What then?
Well, I think that way, then at least anyone who uses a device that they use to connect into the company should, and I know this seems a little Orwellian, but they really should have the security people from the company or the security people that the company is retained as a third-party vendor to actually look at any device that's being connected into that company. Because trust me, whatever it costs is nothing compared to the agony and financial upheaval that you'll go through based on the fact that your company has been breached.
Yeah, and cybersecurity in this regard is like, you know, a little tiny, I hate to say it, but I think it's true. It's a little bit like going to the doc, the embarrassing kinds of doctors who do the embarrassing kind of tests. So you have to, you know, sometimes you just have to grin and bear it.
Think of it as a digital proctology test.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah, so, I think that's a good one.
And again, think of this as a learning experience and a teachable moment. And frankly, to get through a teachable moment without having an extinction level event in an organization, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So count your blessings.
And get the word out. That's something where a lot of folks we've talked to after they've been targeted, one of the things that they say is, I'm going to go now tell other people, because it's relatively easy to have that happen. So just warning others is pretty key and something big that we try to do here.
Yeah, no, first of all, God bless you guys. I mean, it's a good topic. It's a worthwhile conversation that needs to happen in the business world. We certainly have had these conversations and probably saved us from a larger catastrophe. We're happy to share our experiences, and I was thrilled to offer it up for you guys here to share. And it's important that we help each other out. It's an important topic. It's a worthwhile topic. And I appreciate you guys spreading the word.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience with us. And it is very important. Collaboration, cooperation, communication, the three C's on top of our three M's. This is kind of what it's all about. This is how we better protect ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
Throw some confetti on that employee.
Yeah. We're going to buy her some cupcakes. So. at the very least.
Thanks, Josh.
What the Hack is a Loudtree Media production in partnership with Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. You can find What the Hack wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow us on social media and find additional information at adamlevin.com.